Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show from the Labatt Blue Studio. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Bleed blue and white, drink blue and light. And don't forget to try the new Labatt Blue Light Seltzer Variety Pack, available at retailers throughout Pennsylvania.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante, along with Thomas Frank Carr. T. Frank, first of all, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year. Hope you had a great holiday season.
I did, and in a major surprise, I ate too much.
So it's an upset.
Yeah, who could have seen that coming? Yeah. So anyway, let's get going here with our show. What I wanted to do today is all of us have our thoughts on how different individuals play during the Outback Bowl. But if we really want to know how they perform, we got to get the real scoop from T. Frank. So that's what we're going to do today. So don't let us down, T. Frank. A lot of pressure on you. But before we get to the players who actually performed during the Outback Bowl, just wanted to get your quick reaction to Rashid Walker declaring for the draft.
Well, first off, I thrive under pressure until I don't. So we'll start there. I don't know. I have a hard time with this question anymore because I don't know that there is an answer. I was looking up some information yesterday, and everyone has an opinion about what value is, right? So Rashid Walker, if he comes back next season, could potentially be a second or third round pick, and that is different. That's difference making money. Yes, that is. But right now, if he were to be a seventh round pick, he would make $600,000 next year if he were to play the season under a rookie contract. Most seventh-round picks don't get cut. Maybe you get cut the next year, but typically you don't get cut. Rashid Walker, as talented as he is, probably is one of those guys that is not going to get cut unless he doesn't work hard. And if you're in the NFL and you're not working hard, then you weren't going to make it anyway. So I don't know. You know, I used to think I had a firm clue or belief on these things, and the more I think about it, if someone put $600,000 in front of me, I would not stay in school. I would go and I would work at that job, which makes more than 90% of the jobs out there in America. And I understand it's not guaranteed money. I understand. But if you're an athlete and you've been told your whole life that you're destined to be there, even if it hasn't gone exactly the way you want, you know it's within your control to stay on a roster. I mean, just looking at it from those perspectives. So I have a hard time saying one way or another whether or not a guy made a right decision. Brandon Smith, if he's not a first-round pick, but he's a third-round pick, he's still going to have more money in his lifetime than I will make in three. So, I don't know. When it comes to that stuff, it's all a very personal decision. So I'm reserving more and more on that of, like, it's his decision. He probably made the right one. It's probably fine.
My reaction is I will not question guys on their decision to go pro. We don't know their personal situation. We don't know if they're unhappy going to school, would rather move on to the next phase of their life. So I don't ever want to question these players in that way. But I think the question I often have, and you may have alluded to this answer, is could they come back and make a significant change to their draft status? For example, when Michael Mennett came back, he didn't improve his draft status. Perhaps he even hurt it. And as a center or offensive lineman, there weren't many centers who go high in the draft. Yeah. So perhaps coming back for him wasn't going to do much for his draft status. We saw Jahan Dotson and Jaquan Brisker come back, and we know they improve their draft status. They're both probably going to be first-round or early second-round picks. Don't know if that's how it would have been the year before. And as you said, maybe the math would have worked for them going as a fourth- or fifth-round pick a year ago and showing what they can do. But when you mention Rashid Walker potentially coming back, it might have improved his draft status from a late-round pick to an early-round pick. And I think that's the way we can look at that. My question should have been, do you think he could have improved his draft status very much by coming back?
Well, yeah, I don't think that that's necessarily, I think a lot of people can see that. I guess it just comes down to the question of, does that matter? Because part of me, not to be fatalistic about it, but you're good or you're not. Jahan Dotson or Jaquan Brisker, if they go to the NFL and they were drafted in the second or third round, I'm reasonably confident they're getting a second contract. Unless something happens where they get injured or something derails. We're talking about the conservative guaranteed money, and people always want guarantees, or believing in yourself, letting it ride. That's what these guys have been doing the whole time. Like, they've been letting it ride in their choice of career. They're going to school to go to football. That's what all of these guys are here to do. Now, they get an education on the way, but every one of these kids believes they're going to the NFL. So they're letting it ride there since they were 18. And to have them make a decision otherwise is, I guess, more uncommon lately.
All right, let's get back to the guys who did play in the Outback Bowl and will be back next year. The obvious first guy to talk about is Sean Clifford. I'll admit it, T. Frank, all along I've been saying I couldn't wait to see Clifford play in the Outback Bowl. I thought finally with 4 weeks rest, recovery from all the nicks and bruises he's had, I expected a great performance from him. We didn't see a great performance, right?
No, it was probably his worst of the season, considering what you just said. The Illinois game, you can explain that he was obviously not healthy. I'm trying to think of some of the other games he struggled in, but that's the one that comes to mind as a comparable performance, and that was probably worse, and he didn't have 9 overtimes to get to 18 points as an offense or whatever it was in that game. I kind of block out that overtime in my mind, where I know it happened, but I have no details from those plays because the whole time I'm just going, this is ridiculous. And in this game against Arkansas, he was so bad under pressure in the second half that it tanked the offense completely. And part of the problem was it was all on his shoulders because they declined once again to run the ball.
Well, and there's some of those plays, the obvious ones to the casual observer, the fan, you know, the interceptions were poor, the wide open Theo Johnson that could have been a touchdown. Was he under pressure in those plays? And how do you account for what's going on with him? Should we just throw up our hands and say, that's what Sean Clifford is? As I think that's what you told us earlier in the season, T. Frank, and I refuse to listen to you.
So somebody asked me this question the other day, and, you know, going back to the Auburn game, how did things get so bad for this offense? And I don't want to boil it down to one simple thing because it is a myriad of things that arrive at one conclusion. But the conclusion is that early in the season, everything was on Sean Clifford's shoulders. And he was playing within the structure of the offense, and the offensive structure was succeeding against defenses. But over time, teams get a book on you. And if you don't evolve while keeping your core concepts and principles, and you don't evolve on those ideas, you will backslide. And this offense couldn't evolve. There was no place to go because somebody asked me, well, why aren't they adjusting the scheme? Adjust to what? Where are you going on a team that can't throw the ball deep consistently and can't run the football, so you have the short to intermediate passing attack and the screen game? Where else are you going? So the box, it feels like to me, shrunk all season long, and in that, Sean Clifford's weaknesses were magnified. And that's kind of what it was in the Outback Bowl, was there were open receivers that were not targeted on plays where you would want your veteran quarterback to be able to see. One example was on a 3rd and 10, you have 2 in routes and one deep route to Keandre Lambert-Smith. And as far as I read the play, you're reading the safety. Where he's looking, you're going to throw opposite of the deep middle safety. The deep middle safety immediately turned to Parker Washington on the in cut. I didn't see Sean Clifford's eyes move from that read. He threw the ball to the third option on that play, but at no point did he even consider throwing the go route. And Keandre Lambert-Smith had 2 steps on the guy. Now, I don't know the offensive structure. So I can't tell you for sure that he missed his read. But when you look at that safety, and he has got his back to the sideline. It's not like he's in the middle kind of playing everything even. He has declared where he's going. And if you just go, oh, throw where he's not looking, you at least have a chance at some of those plays. That's the sort of stuff that even in the plays that you didn't see targeted, those were some of the decisions from a clean pocket that he wasn't making. So the pressure got to him early. And I firmly believe that when they rushed 5 and 6 and they got that intentional grounding penalty early, bad Sean Clifford came out. Guy that doesn't perform well and doesn't process under pressure. So even when he's not under pressure, he's operating as if he was. That's how I read that game.
We're going to have plenty of time during the offseason to talk more Sean Clifford expectations going into next year. Let's take a look at some of the other players. We had Olu Fashanu get his start there at left tackle in place of Rashid Walker. What did you think of his performance?
I was largely encouraged. I thought he was in command and control of his position. His eyes were typically right, and he was doing everything from a positional fundamental standpoint to hold his end of the bargain. Of all the players on the field, he was not the problem. Now, there are some things when it comes to the scheme and the protections that put him in a bad situation where I don't know if he made the right read, but at least when he was wrong, he blocked somebody. So in certain situations, they were running an overload where you are sending more pass rushers out of sight of the line of scrimmage than there are blockers. So if it's an empty formation, there's no running back or tight end, you're sending 6. If it's 6, you're sending 7. They were doing that early in the game. And in certain situations, you're supposed to block 1 or 2 guys, and then the quarterback is supposed to be responsible for the other. And typically, if you're the offensive lineman, you block the interior guy, and you make the guy that has the longest path go unblocked. So the outside guy. Arkansas did a great job of making conflicts and decisions for the offensive line. So there are a couple times that Olufashunu didn't block the interior guy, but I don't know what his assignment was. I don't know what the pre-snap communication was. And at the very least, he was able to block his guy when he picked a guy to block. And then the quarterback has to make up for it after that. So there might be some mental mistakes in there, but from a physical standpoint, I thought he was good. Just from his evaluation, there's some things that I'll be interested to watch against better competition because there weren't superior pass rushers. But you should be very encouraged by what Olufashunu did on Saturday because he actually lived up to all the hype we got from his teammates and coaches throughout the year.
Just blocking someone is an improvement over what we saw often this season.
And keeping them blocked! Not like blocking them for a second. They stayed blocked the whole play. It was a refreshing change of pace watching that.
It was. And I'm thinking of that Michigan game where Rashid Walker just whiffed on perhaps the best pass rusher in the country. That's not a good thing. At least block somebody, as you said, T. Frank. All right, that's going to be it for quarter number one. When we come back in quarter number two, we're going to pick up where we left off. We're going to look at other individual players, and we're going to get T. Frank's grade on them. So stay tuned for that.
This is where the temperatures are unkind. This is where water freezes in the blink of an eye. This is where the wind bites harder than a mid-ice cross check. This is where the beer is always on ice. This is Labatt Hockey, played the way Mother Nature intended. Labatt Blue is proud to support pond hockey and all the hearty souls that like to play it cool. This is Labatt Hockey.
Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.